when we think about driving the mass consumer adoption of Bitcoin, it can't just be an incremental improvement to an existing behavior. We've got to actually create new human behaviors that aren't possible on today's payment channels.
Hello, welcome to episode 20 of the Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. I'm hardly a cryptocurrency expert. I'm just an average guy who became captivated by Bitcoin in early 2013. This podcast is my opportunity to learn about cryptocurrency. On April 18th, 2015, Los Angelinos were treated to our city's first Bitcoin conference called the State of Digital Money. There's a lot of great content that I recorded from this conference, and in today's episode, I bring you a presentation by GoCoin CEO and founder Steve Bjerregaard. Then Steve hosts a panel about merchant mass adoption of digital currency with an amazing group of panelists. You'll hear, in order of appearance, Justin Newton, CEO of NetKey, Paul Puay, CEO and founder of Airbits, Nick Sullivan, founder and CEO of ChangeTip, Andrew Lee, CEO of Purse, and Connie Chung, Senior Payments Product Manager at Expedia. The show notes for this episode include details about all the speakers, links to the content covered in the show, and videos of the presentation and the panel discussion. Just go to thebitcoingame.com and look for episode 20.
The only major platform that accepts Bitcoin, Dogecoin, and Litecoin. So here's Steve Bjerregaard, CEO and founder of GoCoin.
All right, thank you. So one quick thing, we also now accept Tether. Those of you who are not familiar with it, we've added that to our portfolio of coins. And one of the interesting things about Tether is that it's actually pegged to the US dollar. And so it doesn't have the volatility problem. So from a merchant processing standpoint, I think that's important. So I'm going to take a little bit different approach than maybe you've seen in the past, those that have seen me speak before. But I'm going to go into a little bit of the why I'm so much of a believer that we're at the very beginning of the third wave of revolution here. And the first wave being the internet, and these were the enabling technologies. In the early days, you had AOL providing access and content. You had Earthlink started providing access. And these are some of the early guys. And when Netscape browser came along, all of a sudden you have this big boom of websites and so forth. The next major event I point to is the smartphone revolution. And the reason I'm bringing these two up is these both are the enabling technologies that really put us where we are into the third wave. And I was into the smartphones very early on. So in, I think it was about 97 or so, we signed up as the first BlackBerry partner in the West. And for a number of years, we were way, way ahead of the curve. We were trying to build apps, and this was before, the whole app revolution even was a thought. But in seeing that and realizing how early we are, it really tells me that we're still pretty early in the third wave, which I'm calling the blockchain revolution. And some of the things that are interesting is the millennial generation, if you look at them, they're firm believers that in the next 5 years, 50% of millennials believe that a tech startup will overhaul the need for a bank. All right, just pause on that for a second. They think that banks will be phased out because some tech startups, similar to an Uber, which is eliminating the need for taxis, or Airbnb, which is starting to impact the hotel market. So this is really the millennials' belief. And what makes it interesting is to really look at currency from a historic standpoint. You start to realize that in the early days, back when there was bartering systems, that they were fine for people that are like subsistence farmers and so forth, but it really, you couldn't build a society around a barter kind of system. So I'd say to most people that think of Bitcoin as, oh, it's gonna be this disruptive thing to the government to the point where we're not gonna need central banking and so forth. I just like to remind people that Bitcoin doesn't have a navy, so you're not gonna actually overthrow the government with Bitcoin. So kind of get that out of your head and keep a realistic view of what it can and can't do and what it will and won't. So a lot of people, this is a popular slide that a lot of you have seen, talking about all of the other protocols for the internet. Everything from the early days of file transfer protocol to move files back and forth. SMTP was used to send email messages. And then people are pointing to the Bitcoin protocol as sort of the final piece of the puzzle. But I ask the question, is it really going to be Bitcoin or just some blockchain variant? So I think it's still too early to call. I think the invention's great, but Bitcoin has some problems, and those are some of the things I'm going to talk about today. So this is familiar territory, the token economy. What's interesting here is you look at how small the Bitcoin piece of the pie is down here. But look at other tokens, such as loyalty points, is about a $20 billion market. You've got air miles and coupons and all these other virtual forms of currency, if you will. And so this is familiar territory. But in my view of the world here, I think that we're going to start to encroach into things like air miles and coupons, and these kinds of systems will all start to converge into something that's backed by a transparent currency. So if you look at the millennials, the other thing that's really fascinating is this number actually blew me away. $41 trillion is going to move from the boomers, the baby boomers, to the millennial generation over the next, call it, 20 years. So that's a huge amount of money. And some of the characteristics of these millennials is they don't really trust financial institutions. They don't trust banks. They have a trust in themselves, and they'll invest in themselves as opposed to putting money with a Goldman Sachs in places like this. So these people are the center of the bullseye of who are using digital currencies. So as you look at this ecosystem of all of the different companies, and you start to analyze, okay, there's people that have different components of this, and then there's people that are doing like the full stack. And you know, this is borrowed from the CoinDesk report. But it's interesting to see how the different sectors are starting to break down through mining and the other pieces. But I would argue that most of the companies in these space, I think almost without exception, now that mining is no longer profitable or marginally profitable, most companies aren't making profits yet. So as the regulators come in and start to bark about regulation, we need to be pushing back and say, this market is so early that the companies aren't even making money yet, yet you're going to try to put unnecessary regulation on an industry that's still just in its infancy. So I put the slide up there to emphasize that point. So now I'm going to get into just the payment processing. And this is, our area of the industry. So PayPal selected the three of us, BitPay, Coinbase, and GoCoin, as their three payment processors. And if you look at market share, BitPay has about 50% market share, whereas Coinbase is about 35%, GoCoin has about 8%. So collectively, we make up, I would say, the majority of payment processing. And what's interesting is, collectively, if you looked at all three of the companies, I would bet you probably have enough business and payment processing today to support one company, not three and certainly not five or six. Because as the price of Bitcoin has come down, the transaction volume has come down significantly. Okay, so we need to take a realistic look at where we are as an industry and figure out what are some of the problems and how can we solve them. And the panel that I'm going to be hosting here in a second, which is mainstream adoption, mass adoption, we've got great adoption coming through the merchants. I think this slide is wrong. This is also in the CoinDesk slide because they show that in the first quarter, there's less than 2,000 between Coinbase and BitPay. Because if that's the case, then we basically outpaced both of them in the first quarter because we had close to 3,000 merchant signups. So merchant adoption is not the problem. Merchants are come on, but they've been sold that no chargebacks. They've been sold the Bitcoin community is going to step up and support you. And that's probably true right when they launch. You'll see a bunch of transactions, but the merchants aren't doing the work that needs to be done. The work that needs to be done is to drive adoption. So how do we answer the question, what's in it for the consumer? Because right now there's not enough in it for the consumer for them to go and shop and buy things with Bitcoin. They're still using it as an asset class, storing it away, and waiting for the value to go up. So we have all of these major retailers that we got really excited. They've made their announcements, and I think it's a little bit disappointing. I think that most of these merchants expected to have a lot more transaction volume. What we've noticed is most of them are relatively lazy. We've given them all the tools to do analytics, to basically do A/B testing at checkout, but most of them just take the lazy approach. They just put it up as another payment method, and it's sort of the build it, they will come mentality. It's the wrong way to think about it. It's not build it, they will come. You're gonna have to go out and do the hard work to drive adoption. So I wanna hear, I'm looking forward to hearing from Connie from Expedia about the types of things they're doing to drive adoption and some of the other merchants. I think the conversation, we need to really figure out what's the magic sauce that gets the consumer ready to spend their Bitcoin. So this was also in the recent CoinDesk. And this speaks to the chicken and egg problem. It's not so much the chicken and egg. We're signing up 130 merchants per week right now. So the merchants are coming. They know they have a problem, and they're hoping we can solve it. But once they do the work, and then they realize the transaction volume is so low, what can we do to really start to drive more people to these sites? So a couple of statistics, and I probably jumped ahead on a couple of these points. So we've had about 7,000 merchants sign up for our services. Yet of those merchants, only about 10% of them consistently do a lot of transactions. So it's not as high as probably people are thinking. So 10% of those merchants really transacting. And then of those, when somebody's getting ready to check out, okay, so they've gone through, they've filled their shopping cart, they have the product that they want in there, they get down to their payment method, they look Visa, MasterCard, Bitcoin, they click Bitcoin. In that case, this is a shopper who you think is ready to pay, only 25% of those invoices actually get completed. So what happens to the 75%? Where did they go? We have no idea. 75% of the people that come to the site, fill the shopping cart, take the time to fill out all the shipping information, all of this is typically behind the payment. 75% of them go somewhere else. So I think we need to figure out where did they go. Now, we do see some merchants that are as high as 80%, where people who get to the checkout will actually complete that checkout. So how do we take these use cases and fine-tune it and figure out what's the magic that that site's doing that the other ones aren't? So I think analytics are going to be a very big area of interest. I think the consumer on-ramps is still a major problem. So how do we take those 75% who are, let's just call them Bitcoin curious, and turn them into Bitcoin users? So I think this also opens the door a little bit for altcoins. Some of the interesting aspects of Bitcoin, the 10-minute block time certainly causes some transactional challenges for merchant processing. The high volatility is a killer. I mean, there's no bigger impact to the merchant processing than the price of Bitcoin. So people say Bitcoin price doesn't matter, but to us it really does. You know, it's very evident that when mining became less and less profitable and the miners started flooding the market with coins, that our transaction volume went way down. Okay, so the deflationary design really encourages people to hoard. So possibly, are there other coins that maybe are better? Is hopefully Tether or something like that another coin that has all the great properties of Bitcoin in terms of fraud protection and so forth that can maybe help solve this problem? And maybe we can get merchants to start settling in Tether as opposed to, you know, having us go through the banking systems and do expensive wires. So most of you have seen what a transaction looks like. So this is sort of a standard slide deck. And I think we're trying to make up some time. So this shows what the process looks like at checkout. And then there's more stuff in here that I think we can probably sort of skip past and get onto the panel. Wanted to make up some time. Or do you want me to take a couple questions? Sure, fire away. Any questions? Yeah, Micah. I've got about five of them. And all five of those are competing to which goes into the new, you know, plan B for GoCoin 2.0. But one thing that it's sort of, you think of, you either, you know, have the fight come to you or you go to the fight. I think our strategy is going to be that we're going to go to the fight. I think that we need to start driving consumer adoption. And as a payment processor, that's not typically your role. We're typically a business-to-business. But I think that one of the things we can do is start to help our merchants more than just giving them software tools. I think we need to actually train them how to train their users. Yes, Rob?
I have an issue. Bitcoin's low right now, in my opinion. I don't want to spend it on users.
Yeah, so you have the tax consequences, you have the low price, you have a lot of factors that impact people's use of the coins. And those are all problems that need to be solved. And I think that the tools, we've been waiting for wallet tech to help solve the problem of the tax consequence and track your cost basis in there. But I really haven't seen anybody really solve that yet. And I know it's hard because you could end up getting Bitcoin from many different places. But I think that we'll see some sort of wallet that starts to get more and more intelligent and be able to track, cost basis and help you, with reporting, as well as, help you with things like, other payments that are recurring, things of that nature.
Today's magic word is the four letters
S-O-D-M
for State of Digital Money. You have 1 week from this episode's release to use the magic word and claim your share of this week's listener distribution of LTB coin on letstalkbitcoin.com.
This is going to be fun. I've been waiting for this. All right, we have some fresh victims, the guys that are going to change the world. I think this is the most important panel of the day. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the moderator. But really, we need to answer one fundamental question, and that's what's in it for the consumer? And in the U.S. right now, there's not much in it for the consumer. There really isn't. Privacy, yeah. Most people don't care. We gave up our privacy years ago with Facebook and Google. Google owns our mail and everything that we've ever thought Google owns right now. So that's not compelling enough. And giving them a 1% or 2% discount, not compelling enough. How do we really, really make a difference? So I'm going to just go down the line, have you guys introduce yourself and your company, try to take about, no more than 90 seconds, and tell us what you do, and then we'll start with the questions.
Cool. Hi, I'm Justin Newton. I'm the CEO and co-founder of NetKey. And our company is actually focused on looking at solutions to help drive mass market adoption of Bitcoin that need to be solved at the industry layer versus a point solution. And our first product that we rolled out tackles wallet addresses. So as all of you guys know, a 30-character wallet address is not very user-friendly. And so we've built a wallet name service that we've integrated with actually a number of partners on this stage and other folks out in the industry so that you can type an easy to remember wallet name into send fields instead of a complicated wallet address.
Cool. Paul?
Hi, everyone. My name is Paul Pui. I'm CEO and co-founder of Airbits. We have a booth over here today. And we build, or at least our mission is to build Bitcoin solutions that are very familiar to people while still retaining true blockchain and Bitcoin technology and decentralization, a really big focus on privacy and decentralization. And so we have right now an iPhone and Android mobile wallet that in our goal is try to feel somewhat like mobile banking, but underneath the covers, you get true blockchain operations.
All right, I'm Nick Sullivan. I'm the founder and CEO of ChangeTip. I'm also a mentor at 500 Startups and a mentor at Plug and Play Tech Center. And then I run the Bitcoin Syndicate with Gil Pincina and Michael Turpin on AngelList. I'm pretty excited to talk about microtransactions as the specific use case for what can help drive the mass consumer adoption of Bitcoin.
Hi, I'm CEO and co-founder of Purse.io, and I think Steve set us up perfectly for the consumer incentive adoption issue, but our issue is to drive mainstream adoption by providing consumer incentives. So Purse is a marketplace that connects Amazon shoppers with unused gift card inventory, and we leverage Bitcoin technology to be able to provide 20% discounts off everything on Amazon.
I don't usually talk like this, but I lost my voice yesterday, so please excuse me. My name is Connie Chung. I work for Expedia, and I'm the Senior Payments Product Manager for Expedia. We started accepting Bitcoin last year in June, and just with the goal, with the whole payments mind, I have a view of payments globally. So Bitcoin we just have in the U.S. right now, and the goal is just to allow customers to be able to buy in whatever format they want travel. Today, it's offered just for hotels.
All right, I'm going to be mean, and even though her voice is hurting, and at the risk of not getting their Dogecoin, Litecoin, Tether business, I'm going to pick on Connie.
Yes, so we are processing through Coinbase, not GoCoin.
I understand. That's what I said. At the risk of not getting your other digital currencies that they don't process, at the risk of that, I'm going to ask you, was Expedia very satisfied, disappointed? Where in the spectrum of 1 to 10 were you when you launched Bitcoin payments?
Very satisfied. I'm surprised by some of the numbers you presented. We've seen a lot higher, better numbers than what you've presented earlier. We saw higher adoption than we expected. And yes, transactions have dropped down in the last few months, but not too extreme. We're maybe running at about 60 to 70% what we had middle of last year.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing are average numbers. Yeah. If I took specific industries, travel being one that does quite well.
Exactly, in travel, there's so few options, so I think people know, hey, if I'm insisting on using Bitcoin, I have to go to Expedia.
Now, do you think it's Bitcoin people that are coming to your site, or do you think you're actually driving new users to come and experiment with Bitcoin and drive the adoption?
We see both. We've actually been monitoring really closely whether or not these were customers we've seen in the past that also happen to use Bitcoin. We have people specifically coming to our .com site, Expedia.com site, because that's the only one we have Bitcoin right now, based in EMEA, based in Europe. They have their own Expedia.co.uk site, but because we don't offer Bitcoin there, they come to our Expedia.com site. But they're coming specifically to pay with Bitcoin.
Okay, you didn't give me the 1 to 10 number, though.
Eight.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Great. All right, Andrew. So you guys are seemingly doing really well. It seems like you've been driving a lot of adoption. Tell me some of the things that are exciting to you and what you've done to help to drive adoption.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that we've observed as Bitcoiners is, you know, and you talked about this as well, but merchant adoption has hugely outpaced consumer adoption. And that's because consumers are completely disincentivized to spend Bitcoin. Merchants get all the benefits. Irreversibility is a merchant benefit. Saving on interchange is also a merchant benefit. Whereas consumers are stuck with the cost of volatility. And so since we started about a year ago, we've been growing pretty rapidly. The curve for merchant processing through Bitcoin and our processing volume is probably inverse over the past year. We're transacting close to $250,000 a month, outpacing maybe overstocks.
I got to ask you, how is it possible that I can buy something from Amazon with Bitcoin and you're going to save me 20%?
Yeah, so we're connecting users. It's a peer-to-peer marketplace, and we're connecting users with unused Amazon gift card inventory. And this is something that not too many people in the developed world realize, but there are dozens of services like Mechanical Turk, Amazon Affiliates, Swagbucks, Ebates, Jumo Wallet, that literally pay people in the developing countries with Amazon gift card balances. And it's one of the most illiquid forms of payment that they can get. I mean, they're literally buying iPads and shipping it to India, takes 2 months, and reselling it for rupees. We trim that process down to 2 days. 2 days, if they have Amazon Prime, they can get Bitcoins. They subsidize your discounts, most people that have access to Bitcoin at market rates. But in literally 4 days, they can get the fiat currency. That's how our discounts are powered. So most of the time when we talk about Purse, the value proposition is huge savings on Amazon. But instead, the more compelling reason is the only way to liquidate Amazon gift cards.
So it's the breakage. You're actually solving that breakage problem. That's
yeah,
very
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. And it's kind of a remittance hack. So we've partnered with UnoCoin in India to help coordinate the fiat transfer. And it's really fascinating.
Great. So Nick, change tip. You guys... I saw the big announcement that Coinbase basically said, you know what, we're out of the business. ChangeTip's doing it. They're doing it so well that we give uncle. So congratulations on that. And so tell us, what kind of adoption you're seeing, what things you're doing to sort of drive new adoption and getting new people into the ecosystem.
Yeah, so I'll take a little bit of a different stance. The tone of this conversation seems to be fairly focused on the typical e-commerce checkout flow, and I'll go in a slightly different direction, which is the utility of Bitcoin. If I really look at, with the backdrop that most of the conversation, or most of what I'm going to say applies to the U.S., in emerging markets, there's an entirely different story about the need for Bitcoin. But here in the US, a really well-established financial infrastructure, so doesn't really solve any pain for the typical US American consumer. There's one key area that I think it does, and that's cross-border remittances. That's something that is difficult, painful, and expensive today. It takes 2 to 3 days, card charges up to 10%. Bitcoin is a better solution. It's a way for technology to be applied to make an existing behavior, an existing process more efficient. Peter Thiel, in his recent book, Zero to One, talks about that as a one-to-N opportunity. He talks about the zero-to-one opportunity is when you invent new human behaviors. And this is where I think microtransactions comes in. 5 years from now, I think we're going to look back and wonder what we did before we had microtransactions. So when we think about driving the mass consumer adoption of Bitcoin, it can't just be an incremental improvement to an existing behavior. We've got to actually create new human behaviors that aren't possible on today's payment channels.
Yeah, I love what they're doing. If anybody hasn't been to Change Tip, you should. And now here's an endorsement for Paul. I hadn't looked at the Airbits wallet in quite some time. And before this panel, I was like, wow, I better brush up a little bit. I was blown away. I hadn't seen what you guys had done with Airbits and your wallet. Your directory is beautiful. It looks, you know, very professional. And so I'd love to hear, Paul, you know, what else is happening at Airbits and what things you're doing to get the word out there.
Well, when I talk to a lot of people and say, okay, what will it take you to use Bitcoin? And these are the people that are not the libertarians, not the crypto anarchists. And they just tell me it's got to be easier or it's got to be cheaper. And so I'm really happy that Purse is making it significantly cheaper. But those are two scales where if it's not that much cheaper, then it's got to be that much easier. And so that's been our core focus, is definitely make Bitcoin feel very familiar. And when things are familiar, things are easier. So the user experience that we built is at our core focus. But at the same time, we don't compromise on the core fundamentals of you owning your own money, not centralizing it. You have financial privacy, you have financial freedom. With respect to it being easy, we've worked on multiple protocols to enable every single tap being minimized. And so we're really excited about micropayments as well, like Nick had mentioned, and we're looking at partnering with companies such as Watch My Bit, who is over there in the audience, to enable micropayments for YouTube type of content and video that sits on their platform. And we think that that can really drive adoption, because now we have what potentially are a lot of the entertainment industry, which can dictate people's behavior. And if we put their content primarily for Bitcoin and make it incredibly fluid, couple taps, one or two taps to pay for that micro content, then we can drive a lot of the masses that don't care about the core fundamentals of Bitcoin to use it.
That's great. That's great. And Justin, so you guys are doing this name service, making it easier for people to find wallets, sort of like DNS is done for websites. You're attempting to do the same thing for Bitcoin. So what strategies and what kind of help do you guys need from the ecosystem?
Sure. So, I mean, we're taking a slightly different tack. I think that, you know, if we look down the aisle here, each of the folks on the panel here are really doing different things to make Bitcoin more attractive. We're taking a slightly different tack in that we're actually trying to make Bitcoin less unattractive at the moment. And so, you know, we were looking for places where there's barriers to entry and challenges. And one of those was just interaction between everybody in the ecosystem. There's a bunch of people here that have created really nice solutions to do things, and some of them that have followed the earlier speaker, William Quigley's advice of do one thing really well. But if you do one thing really well and a user wants to do five things, well, you better make it easy to interact between them. And so what we're really focused on is making it a lot easier and smoother for interactions between the industry to occur, so that when an Airbits wallet user wants to fund their Change Tip account, they can do that pretty easily. And when a content producer wants to take the money that they've made via the content that they've produced and gotten in via Change Tip and buy themselves a new iPad, they can easily send it over to purse.io.
Very cool. So I don't think you ran out of battery there, but anyway, yeah, that's great. So I think this is a great panel. The only one not represented here is anybody actually selling coin, right? I think we've got all sorts of other parts of the ecosystem well covered. Did you have a comment? I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. I'll chime in afterwards.
No, go ahead.
Actually, with respect to selling coin, we think that a lot of the services out there, all the great services, kind of compromise some of the decentralized aspect of Bitcoin, and that as soon as you buy and sell a coin, it ends up not in your hands. And so our long-term goal is to actually build a platform that connects people to their value and do it globally. And so pretty soon, within the next couple of months, integrated into our platform will be the ability to buy and sell coin through third parties. And so that way we can scale to not just being able to do it here in the US, but in many different countries. And as soon as you've bought that coin, it doesn't sit with us, it doesn't sit with a third party, it sits in your wallet, in your hands. So I think it's a very important value.
That's great. So rather than hear myself speak, which I do all the time, I'd love to hear from the crowd. I'm sure you got some great questions for the crew up here. Let's do it this way.
Hi, my name is Tim with AutoNet, African Umbrella Trust Organization and Network. I have a comment really for Nick. I've never met Nick before whatsoever, but my team is kind of scattered in different parts around the country and the globe, and we all work together on Slack, and we use ChangeTip constantly.
Awesome.
And so anyways, to something that's really cool is on a Tuesday about a month ago, I got an email. I opened it up. It was from Wells Fargo, and it talked about it was from Wells Fargo's legal department that they had to disclose that there was a $230 million class action suit going against Wells Fargo for stacking charges, right? You know what that is. That's when they take your transactions, and they put them in not in chronological order, but in the order of what was the biggest transaction. In other words, they're making money on bouncing everything that passed your big one. Well, the following morning, I got an email from Nick Sullivan, who I've never met, who said, "Today you're awarded from ChangeTip $10 into your wallet for being a good tipper." And I just thought, what opposite polarities. Wow.
That's great.
So
that wasn't quite a question, but great. That was a very entertaining story. Anybody else with a question for
Pam? Real quick comment there. It feels great to be building a product that is inspiring generosity, giving, and appreciation all over the world. I think it's not only important for me and my psyche, but it's good for Bitcoin. Let's stop talking about drugs and Silk Road and just replacing the existing financial system, but let's show the world that there's a good use case for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think the government's going to be really pissed when they have to give Ross all of his coins back. Mm-hmm. Anybody else with questions for the panel? I know it's late in the day. All right.
What about these points where, like, in the States, I can't remember who mentioned it, but in the States, there's not really a reason to even use PayPal. You know what I'm saying? Like, PayPal's penetration isn't even that great.
All right, let's get to a question.
So why not kind of stay in the murky shadows until we can figure out, like, a good way to...
Who wants to address the murky shadows?
That's the whole...
No, I understand what you're saying. It's like where the greatest value proposition is in the murky shadows today, and how do we move from the murky shadows up to lily white clean operators? But...
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at most new technologies, they actually tend to be adopted first by people that are more at the fringes than people that are at the center, because the existing platforms and existing technologies tend to be relatively optimized for the mainstream, but maybe not very well optimized for people that are closer at the fringes, so they need to and are looking for alternatives. So, you know, in the early days of the internet, the thing that always came up was adult content and porn was the evil thing that was out there that was gonna chase you down and kill you in the night. And in Bitcoin, it's drugs and guns. But it's actually part of the natural evolution of these technologies that, you know, the reason that the people at the fringes are willing to do it first is they're getting so much pain from the existing system that the pain of using the new system is lower. Whereas as the technology matures and, you know, all the rest of the folks on this panel are doing a great job of making it easier and removing barriers for the mainstream and coming in with uses that are more towards the center case, that does become the dominant use, you know, on a go-forward basis. So I would just say what you're seeing now is a very customary part of the evolution of any new technology that's being introduced, particularly very transformational ones.
Yes. And the other thing, a lot of people don't realize when PayPal went public, 75% of their transactions were adult and gambling. And once they moved out of those markets, when they went public, they made kings out of NetTeller and Skrill because they moved into those spaces where they had left a huge void. So, Connie, so let's get that back to some of the challenges you see for Bitcoin, and maybe you can share with us a little bit of your strategy.
So you mentioned, I wanted to touch on some of the stuff you mentioned in your earlier presentation about what the merchants are doing or how they don't focus on making that checkout process easier. We're constantly A-B testing throughout our whole site, including on checkout. And part of our problem with Bitcoin, and it's the same problem that we have with PayPal, any redirection. Those of you familiar, credit card payment, you go straight through. If you're using PayPal, Bitcoin, you get redirected off a site. Any additional place where you have to enter information, we lose customers, right? Even with straight up credit cards, if we take your phone number, we're gonna lose customers. So with PayPal, Bitcoin, these redirect forms of payment, every time we add one additional step, logging in, password, type in something else, that's all dropping. So we do things wherever we can to control it and constantly test to see how we can optimize that. The problem with our redirections is we don't control it anymore. When we redirect off the Coinbase to PayPal, that's not our site anymore to then optimize.
So if you had a payment service provider that gave you all of the everything in an API is delivered to you so you could do full analytics, that might be of value?
It is something I would really consider.
Oh, because GoCoin offers that. Yeah, so you could fully.
We do that via GoCoin, by the way. It works great.
Thank you, yeah.
And about the question of how we try to make it more, I think key to making Bitcoin more legitimate as a currency is having large merchants like Expedia adopting and offering it as ability to spend your Bitcoins on our site. Right now, we're very limited. Our supply is only for hotels, where we are the merchant of record. So when you swipe, it actually shows up Expedia. That's the only way we can take Bitcoin today. In the future, near future, I want to get to a point where any supply that we're selling, even airline tickets, we can accept Bitcoin. Today, if you bought Delta on our site, a Delta ticket, most likely you'll see delta.com on your credit card statement. We want to be able to switch that so we're a merchant, so that now Bitcoin users, PayPal users, whatever, can now pay with whatever form of payment they want on any type of supply they want on Expedia.
I think one of these two is going to arm wrestle who goes next.
Yeah, same time. Yeah. Complete each other's words. One of the things I'm going to maybe pick on Expedia a little bit here is that I don't think it's a challenge to live on Bitcoin anymore. There's many places I can go to. I can go to Expedia. I can go to one of the wrapper sites, cheapair.com. But what's going to help adoption is actually give a value proposition to a purse, even if it's a smaller value proposition. Less friction than purse, but at the same time, at least a discount. And merchants like Expedia are saving, I would think, they're saving money by accepting Bitcoin. They're saving on fraud, saving on risk, but they're not passing any of it along. So if any of you are out there, merchants accepting Bitcoin, show some love for the consumers, because you're saving something in respect to pass the savings along. And built into our wallet is actually a merchant directory. And one of the first things we put at the very front of all the listings and search results is whether or not that merchant offers a Bitcoin discount. We want to highlight those merchants, and we're going to be putting amazing amount of effort going forward to really pushing and showing people those merchants that are giving that kind of support to the ecosystem versus a merchant that just says, me too.
That's really smart, Paul. I love what you guys are doing. So, Andrew, so I think that it was the CEO of Amazon that said, your margin is my opportunity. So if you're making good margin, how is this going to be sustainable and how do you defend that?
Yeah, well, so right now, I mean, we're literally the only off-ramp from Amazon gift cards, so we have some leeway in our margins, and we've been expanding our margins since we started. But as long as we're delivering value to both sides of the marketplace, right, we can extract the margin that's appropriate. And so right now, our average consumer is saving 20% off Amazon. You know, how much of a margin or a fee are you willing to pay if you're saving 20% on an item? 3%, 4%, 5% might be reasonable. As long as there's no competition, and things like that, we'll continue to find ways where we can monetize. But other ways where we can capture value and provide value to the customer is make it easier. And so recently we launched Purse Instant, where you get 5% off Amazon instantly. It's shipped with Prime. You don't have to pay with Prime anymore. You don't have to create a wish list on Amazon. You just search on our site, search for whatever you want, whether it's a Ledger wallet or an Age of Crypto book, and instantly buy through our site. And it's 5% off. There's less variance in experience. And and with those transactions, our margins are slightly higher. And at one point, just to comment on the murky use cases, I mean, you know, when I got into Bitcoin like a couple of years ago, I mean, literally the only reputable site, the two most reputable places to go with Bitcoin were Mt. Gox and Silk Road. That was it, and then you had a dozen scam sites. Today, you know, with the panelists here, I mean, we have mobile wallet options. When NetKey's live, when NetKey's used everywhere, we'll be able to send money very quickly and easily and change tip. It's super easy to, you know, send a tip through Twitter today. And I think we've come a really long way. What we really need to do to cross the chasm now is to provide pragmatic use cases for people to use, and we offer to.
Like it or not, we are all here because Silk Road and Mt. Gox did exist. But, Nick.
Yeah, so Connie started to talk a little bit about friction, and I think that's something that we haven't necessarily paid enough attention to. When we're deciding whether or not to do something, this is a user experience adage, we do the mental math on, is the thing that I'm going to get worth the amount of pain that I have to go through to get it? And there's two ways that you can solve that problem. You can either make it easier to get by reducing the friction, or you can make the reward bigger. We've spent some time talking about incentives for consumers, different ways, but Connie started to talk about the checkout process and how it's difficult, not only for the merchants to think about implementing, but the cognitive load that we're trying to impose on the people that are trying to use Bitcoin. It needs to be simpler. When we see the donate with PayPal button on the side of the screen, we don't not click that because we're cheap. We don't click it because we're lazy. So we need to get all of these processes down to zero click or at most one click operations where people don't have to think. iTunes was a great step forward. It showed the power of this, where when you don't have to think about putting your credit card information in and it's only 99 cents. It's a thoughtless purchase. That's the world that we need to move towards and go towards frictionless purchases.
Andrew? I mean, I completely agree that usability will help drive adoption, but you know, what I like to think about is, you know, my parents or my mom, long time ago, I mean, they would to get discounts on their groceries, they would wait on their mail, sort through their mail, find the items that they want, take a pair of scissors, clip it out, remember to take it to the groceries, use it at point of sale, just to save 5 to 10%, right? And I think people, if there's enough of a value proposition to use Bitcoin, I think people will jump through all kinds of hurdles to save, you know, 5 or 25% off Amazon. I think they're willing to do a lot more than we give them credit
for. And I think the hard part still is getting the coin in the first place. If we can, you know, help to solve that problem, I think we're going to make a lot of progress. It blows me away in the analytics area that we have one gaming merchant who's quite large who 2% of their transactions actually get completed. I'm like, what about the 98%? Don't you care? Like, do a little work. Let's take your question.
For the Bitcoin-based companies up there, are you guys doing anything to reach beyond the Bitcoin ecosystem in our own conventions? I mean, I know Paul and I might be teaming up at the YouTube convention, but for everyone else, is there some place to go to introduce this wonderful currency to the non-Bitcoin?
I think this one's mine. So it's been interesting to see the rapid growth of ChangeTip throughout what I believe has been largely the existing Bitcoin community. I think if you are in Bitcoin, you've either heard of ChangeTip or you're already a user. What I'm not going to accept and what we're not going to allow for at our company is to have our growth be capped at growing the Bitcoin ecosystem linearly. The way that we look at it is our addressable audience is the combined audiences of all of the platforms we support. So Reddit, Twitter, GitHub, Facebook, Google+, YouTube. That's the way that we're looking at this. I believe the biggest thing that's held us back as an industry, and ChangeTip in specific, has been how hard it is to get Bitcoin Bitcoin for the normal user. And this is where I keep honing in on friction. So the typical process for getting Bitcoin is well suited for someone who has made a conscious decision that they're going to speculate, they're going to purchase it. Maybe it's someone with an other motivation, whether it be privacy, anarchist, the Federal Reserve Bank attitudes. They want to be able to do it, and that's what has them going through the pain. Actually, Monday, so I'm pretty excited to talk about this. I've been working on it since last May. We're going to enable people to come to changetip.com and buy $25 worth of Bitcoin with a credit card. And I think that's a huge step forward for the more casual user who just wants to dink around and play around with Bitcoin without going through a process that's roughly equivalent to opening up a bank account at some of the other sites.
That's great. That's great. So, question in the back.
Do you guys think that volatility is slowing adoption?
Volatility is absolutely slowing adoption. No doubt about it. It's slowing investment. It's slowing a lot of, there's a lot of problems the volatility causes. But anybody else want to field that one?
Yeah, so I get that comment whenever I try to talk to a merchant that's interested in taking Bitcoin, but they say, oh, the volatility. And so, yeah, the first answer is you can use a payment processor to instantly convert to dollars. However, if you look at the actual amount of volume that a typical merchant would gain, and you add the volatility to that, that's a fraction of a percent that they could potentially lose on a bad day. So in my take, unless you are really, really skinning by the... skin your teeth on your business, then Bitcoin volatility isn't going to make or break you. But at the same time, as your transaction volume grows and it's no longer 0.5%, it becomes 1%, 2%, 3%, I predict that the volatility will go down because that's a sign that Bitcoin's actually being used. It's being more mass adopted. Its value is growing.
And one of the things that we're doing is we're now offering settlement in Tether. So it's you know, got all the properties of Bitcoin without any volatility. So if merchants want to do that to settle in Tether, we'll actually do that at 0% based on something we're doing in that partnership.
Well, I would argue that settling in a currency that's denoted in dollars is not helping the price of Bitcoin. And it's still, I don't think it's necessary if you are really making sub 1% of your revenue in Bitcoin. I think the biggest friction I get is the accounting aspect of it. And a lot of people do care about that, and that is a challenge, and I think software is going to make that easier.
Right. So Question right here?
It's worth pointing out real quick, Steve. It's worth pointing out that I never get questions about volatility. So I think microtransactions are an interesting carve-out for people just don't care if their tip is worth 15% less the next day. So it's an interesting carve-out.
Yeah, that's a great point. Question right here.
My question is, so far, all the discussion about
to supply chains. Yeah, I think it's a great conversation. We've explored supply chain payments in Bitcoin. We get down to the volatility issue again. For example, we put in a deal that we did with Bitfury, for example, where they wanted to pay their suppliers for electricity, for their chips from Taiwan, all of these, they wanted to pay them in Bitcoin. And we got down to the point of discussions, and they're like, we don't want exposure to the volatility. So. In those cases, they're talking about pretty big numbers, so it does actually affect them if it's, you know, changes by 20%. Anybody else want to comment on that?
We don't deal with suppliers per se, since we're simply a software company. However, we do everything in our company's power to complete the loop. And I think that's what you're referring to. Try to complete the cycle of people utilizing Bitcoin, earning Bitcoin, spending Bitcoin. And so our entire company is driven on Bitcoin almost entirely, 90%+. When we do finally make money, it will be in Bitcoin. All of our employees and staff are paid in Bitcoin. We paid our rent in Bitcoin. Our lawyer is paid in Bitcoin, and all consultants. And so they have to make that actual conscious effort to convert it back into dollars. And we tell them that you should make, you know, a sound decision and that there is volatility, but it's entirely up to them. So we start with Bitcoin from the get-go and leave it to them to convert back into USD.
Yeah, I mean, I think volatility is a small problem, but the real problem is directionality, right? In 2013, when Bitcoin was just going up and up and up, nobody complained about volatility. And now that it's going the opposite direction, we're talking about volatility again. But I mean, yeah, I think there are definitely use cases we can build where, and definitely with more adoption, that volatility will decrease.
Justin, you had a...
Yeah, just real quick. There are some companies that are going after the supply chain aspect of it in some ways. There's a company called Align Commerce that's basically doing cross-border payments for companies, and they're doing a nice job with that. And I know there's some companies that are starting to look at entire industries that have trouble getting banked, like the legal marijuana industry in the US. And so that's a place where people are looking at ways to take on the entire supply chain end to end, because, you know, there's a place where people are stuck with literally bundles of cash that they can't deposit in banks. So there's a really strong use case available there.
Yeah, I posted the other day on Facebook, I think the 2016 platform for the presidential candidate should be gay couples should be able to buy their weed with Bitcoin and protect it with a gun. So any other questions in the audience? Eric, you want to get back?
You guys talked a lot about making Bitcoin easier to use, easier to get. And you're seeing a lot of payment technology advance in general in the fiat currency space, right? Venmo's extremely successful. Facebook payments, I would assume there's going to be some sort of payment technology integrated into every social media platform. How does the use case for Bitcoin stay compelling when all the other payment solutions are sort of catching up?
Who wants to field that one?
That's a hard one. This came up in my pitches, as you can imagine. The more astute investors said, well, wait a minute, this is kind of neat, but what is it about Bitcoin that makes it special? Micropayments have been talked about for a long time. Why Bitcoin? And I have three answers. One, the anonymity. I can send money to anybody on a social network. I don't have to know anything about their payment details. Two, since it's a peer-to-peer transaction, there's lower transaction fees or no transaction fees in the case of ChangeTip. And then three, it's a currency neutralizer, so I don't have to worry about what the other person is on the other side. U.S. dollar, you could argue, is almost that ubiquitous, but it is a true currency neutralizer.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bitcoin, from just a payments perspective, and I used to work at Merrill Lynch covering emerging payments specifically, but there are areas of payment where Bitcoin is better, and areas where it's not. So if we're doing a peer-to-peer transfer in the US and we both use Bank of America, that's just a database entry. That happens in a nanosecond. It doesn't cost anybody anything. And it's a very effective form of payment. But whereas, you know, where Bitcoin has value is that it's programmable and it's internationally available and you don't need to ask permission for it. And you can be your own bank. And there's areas where we can really leverage Bitcoin's properties and to make it better. And so like usability, you know, we're not there to Apple Pay standards yet, but we will one day get there. And there's plenty of other areas we've talked about. I think a lot of great people are working on creative problems around this. But Bitcoin is, you know, this continuous innovation is not going to look, it's not going to be better in every aspect than every other payment solution.
Great. This has actually been a really, really interesting panel. I've been to so many different Bitcoin shows. It's fun to have so many diverse opinions and really smart people on the stage. And you guys have traveled from everywhere from San Diego to San Francisco and Seattle. And so I want to give you each sort of a final opportunity to sort of give your final profound thoughts, as I think we have to wrap up here at 5 o'clock. Oh, 5:10. No, I'm sorry. Let's take another question then. Rob.
Okay, I've used payment processors just to automate the payment process, not necessarily to change my Bitcoin into US dollars. And I was just curious, what percentage of people use GoCoin and use it just to kind of be the back end to process the payment and don't convert it to USD or convert it, you know, 50-50? I know there's options.
Yeah, interestingly, it's almost polar. It's either they take it all in Bitcoin or they take it all in dollars, pounds, or euro. And there's not a whole lot of people that use our split feature. And we're hoping that they'll start to change that behavior with something like Tether coming on board, where they can hold it and then use that asset to hopefully pay their supply chain. I think it's interesting to me that I would think that a lot more people would be holding some percentage of Bitcoin. We usually recommend they hold about 10%, but I would say probably less than 5% actually use that split feature.
What percent are Bitcoin versus dollars?
Oh, wow. It's almost 50-50. Yeah, it's actually surprisingly, that part is actually higher than I thought it would be. But it's almost split down the middle. So, any other questions out here? Eric, I think you had had one a while back.
tip all the things.
So, for example, like, can I tip anything I want of value to anybody, or is it just always going to be Bitcoin focused?
So the question was, is the tipping going to be Bitcoin focused, or will they open it up to other?
Is it an altcoins question, or is it a USD tip jar question?
Value. Same goes for Airbus. You say you're completely Bitcoin ecosystem, but I struggle myself to find the legacy use cases that would allow that to actually stay.
So we're starting off with Bitcoin, but in essence, what we're building is a platform to help people secure digital assets and make it a very familiar process, feel like mobile banking, but in essence, it's true ownership of digital assets. Now, obviously, the low-hanging fruit is Bitcoin. How do you secure a private key? How do you make it familiar? Then how do you then send and receive? But definitely in our future, we see being able to secure more than just a private key for Bitcoin. It can be a private key for other digital assets. It can be login credentials. It can be a private key to encrypt your secure communications. It could be, a lot of other things. Login credentials. So we're building that platform first and then incorporating what people demand on it. And it is an open source platform. If you are working on another currency, another asset that you need secure, encrypted storage, you can utilize that platform for it.
So I've spent a lot of time talking about friction. Our core competency is making payments easier. And with that, with our internal ledger, we don't necessarily care if it's Bitcoin, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal on the way in or out, airline miles. We just want to make it easy to transfer the value.
Very good. Any other questions in the audience? All right, last chance. I was going to let them go down the line here and give us their sort of final thoughts of the panel. Connie, you want to start? I'm going to put you on the spot.
I don't have any profound thoughts, but I guess I could share a little bit just on, you know, I mentioned earlier, kind of our goal from a payments perspective for Expedia, and part of that being Bitcoin is, you know, future adding more lines of supply that customers can pay in Bitcoin, and also expanding to other points of sale. And all of that would help, you know, further legitimize Bitcoin as a form of payment and allow people to actually start thinking, hey, I want to travel. People always want to travel, right? That's something that doesn't die. And hey, I can pay with Bitcoin. So that's our path.
Okay, I actually want to ask you one other question, because we've had an internal debate with my software developers where somebody gets the checkout. We have all these people that abandon, or a lot of people that abandon. And so I said, well, we should give them another option. And my guys say, you know, I don't think we should, because it's going to distract them away from paying. But what's your opinion?
We've definitely seen when people have other options, it distracts. I don't know if it's okay to bring this up. For PayPal, for example, for a while, when we redirected a customer over there, he said, hey, I want to pay with PayPal, right? They started advertising Bill Me Later, or what they call now.
Yeah.
And we're not integrated with that. And the moment they did that, conversion tanked for us. Right. Saw it tank. So any additional thing, any additional advertising, it's like, hey, I've already clicked, I want to pay with Bitcoin. If you now send me to something else, it's just distracting me more. So
okay, I guess I lose that argument. So, well, thanks. Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, when we first started this business, it used to be pretty contrarian to talk about consumer incentives, because, you know, when Bitcoin's going up and up and up, it seemed like there were plenty of incentives for consumers. But, you know, our mission is to continue driving innovative use cases and pragmatic use cases that make Bitcoin worthwhile, make it worth all the hoops you have to jump through to even acquire Bitcoin today. And, you know, it would behoove us not in a technology or mass adoption panel not to mention the technology adoption curve. And I think we're really early on. Everybody in this room, I think, is an innovator. Not even at early adopter phase. When I think early adopter, I think about the people that, you know, stand in line to get the newest iPhone. And there's tens of millions of those people. And, you know, we're nowhere near that. And so, to get across the chasm, you know, get to early adopters and drive mainstream adoption, we think we need to incentivize consumers through use cases.
Yeah, very good. So Nick?
Yeah, so what we're actually building, I mean, a lot of people think of us as this cute little tipping app, and it is a cute little tipping app, but we're also building a micropayment infrastructure for the web. That's what we're really going after. I believe that Bitcoin will finally pay off the promises that we've had for the last 20 years about micropayments, and more specifically, the marriage of Bitcoin and social media is what it's going to take, because that allows for an inflow experience. So to geek out about that for a minute, I think the first spoke off of that micropayment infrastructure for the web that everybody gets excited about and can wrap their head around fairly cleanly is content monetization. For some reason, we've lazily accepted that ads are the right way to monetize content, but they've just inserted themselves into the real value chain, which is the people producing the content and the people consuming it. We haven't had a direct way for when you see something you like, you actually can reward the author of that content. So I want to make that frictionless and easy to do. I want to be able to skip every YouTube pre-roll video ever by saying, yes, Google, I'll pay you a tenth of a penny to not have to watch this, which if you know the mechanics of the online advertising ecosystem, that's 10 or 100 times more than Google is making by forcing me to watch it. So what we've been missing is a low-friction payment mechanism that's connecting those two. Another spoke that I think of in a similar tone is Google and Facebook have gotten us comfortable with this idea of paying them for a user to do something, whether it be install a mobile app, finish an e-commerce checkout flow, try out my product and sign up. And just as the online advertising ecosystem has injected itself into that value chain, the CPA-based advertising network has injected itself into the product owner and consumer value chain. We had somebody come along on Reddit and put up a post that says, I'm a startup. I want you guys to go try my product out. Come back here and leave feedback, and I'll tip you. I think that's a real good example of taking Facebook and Google out of that picture by creating a direct connection between the people wanting to use the products and the product owners.
So Nick, for people that aren't familiar with ChangeTip, can you just sort of explain the mechanics of somebody puts a post up on Twitter, you guys monitor it, look it for a certain format, and then move it from one wallet to another?
Sure.
Just walk
through
the mechanics.
Sorry for leaping over that. We're integrated on a number of different sites. We're listening for mentions of ChangeTip. So if you see a YouTube video or a Reddit post or a GitHub comment or any of the platforms around a tweet that you like, you can respond to it and mention ChangeTip and an amount, and we'll allow for a Bitcoin transaction over that channel. So I can actually send you a beer over Twitter. If there's anybody that's not familiar with it in the room, come grab me afterwards and I'll give you some free Bitcoin over Twitter.
It's a very cool service. It's very cool indeed. So Paul, I have a feature request for the wallet. So I was looking through your directory, which is very cool, but what it doesn't have is sort of what you have on Waze, where like they say the police are going to be up here and it says, are they there or not? And so I want to see on the merchant directory something that gives the, are they still there? Because I saw a couple of people that were, that I happen to know aren't there anymore. So I think, hey, wait, I should be able to just thumbs down that they're no longer there and or something like that. But not that would be the only thing, but enough votes. Anyway, so Paul, please.
Well, as a comment to that, we definitely want to expand a lot of the effort into the merchant directory, but our big, big focus is the wallet. And we think that's where a lot of the innovation is. The merchant directory is a feature of that wallet to drive people value once they own Bitcoin. And maybe not, well, somewhat related to this topic that I want to close on is, if someone had asked the question of, well, how is Bitcoin competing against traditional payments? And I gave a bit of a talk about this in LA, actually, over here about a month ago, in that if you look at all of the different payment systems we have ever used since the beginning of time, from like shells to gold to cash, not look at the currency, but look at the payment method, the most successful payment methods ever have been the ones that have been on the most open platform, the most decentralized, the ones where people can make the choice of how they want to receive payment and how they want to send payment. And as much as the Bitcoin industry loves to hate credit cards, it's actually a very open payment platform. A merchant can choose their processor, and a consumer can choose their bank. It's fairly open in that sense. And Visa became very successful when that platform became more open. And if we look at the mobile payment options in the space today, Bitcoin is the absolute most open platform in that I can use any real Bitcoin wallet, and a merchant processor can use either a wallet or a merchant processor like GoCoin to receive it, and it's all intercompatible. And each of those processors may have their benefits and disadvantages, and each of those wallets may have benefits and disadvantages. But as consumers, we can choose, and as merchants, we can choose, and I can send from consumer to consumer, merchant to consumer, you name it. And that's what's driven success in prior payment protocols, and decentralization is what I believe is going to bring success to Bitcoin, where these other mobile platforms that we're competing against, such as Apple Pay and Google Wallet and PayPal Wallet, which have absolutely sucked, like they just have not taken off the way they definitely hoped that they would, This is why I think we're going to succeed. And at its core is kind of decentralization. And so Bitcoin became successful over a lot of other digital currencies that tried because it was the one that was truly decentralized. It is a financial innovation because for the first time ever, people could hold their own digital value, not with a third party. Don't forget that. That's the reason why we're all sitting here today. If it wasn't for that simple fact that there's no middleman, there's no third party for you to send value, Bitcoin wouldn't be a revolution at all. So remember that in A, how you decide to utilize Bitcoin and how you support it, and how you implement it if you're a developer, because that's an incredibly important thing. That's why we're here today. And the same way that it was successful over prior currencies, I think that's what's going to make it successful going forward.
Very good, very good. As William Quigley said earlier, convenience beats better every time. So that's to that point. Justin.
Cool, yeah, I'll be really quick. I mean, I just have a couple of things that I'd like to say. The first and the main one is, as you know, the other folks on this panel have really done a great job of doing, focus on places where there's an inefficiency today that you can maximize and use that as a way to pull users into your system and into the mainstream. You know, trying to go out and replicate a system that works well today and just because it's on Bitcoin may or may not win. But if you find use cases like travel, like micropayments, like dealing with inefficiencies with gift cards, like creating a great, you know, user experience that brings everything together, you have the opportunity to bring new users into the ecosystem that eventually tips us over into the tipping point where we are in the mainstream. And it's not going to be by going for where the banks are strong today. It's going to be by going after enough of the places that they're weak that people see the benefits of what we're doing and move over. So I'd encourage you to look for those inefficiencies and to look for people that you can work with to take that one great thing that you're building and ensure that it's working with other things to create great user experiences.
Awesome. Been a great panel. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for listening to these recordings from the State of Digital Money 2015, recorded in downtown Los Angeles, California. If you're curious about Steve Bjorgaard's presentation visuals, check out the embedded YouTube videos in this episode's show notes. Just go to thebitcoingame.com and look for episode 20. The videographer who captured the conference works relentlessly on the front lines of cryptocurrency. Check out all his videos by going to bit.ly/BTC videos. You can also find the link in the show notes. Find me on Twitter as the BTC Game. And you can also find a listing of all the Bitcoin Game episodes at thebitcoingame.com. See you next time.
And what time is the after party?
It's 9 to midnight. We're 7 o'clock. We're 1 o'clock. We're 7 o'clock. We're 7 o'clock. We're 7 o'clock.